Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, this is Lenny
up?
Keys.
Oh, go ahead. You got it.
Yo, what up, everybody? This is Lee from Lee and Keys Real Talk. Coming at you live tonight on this Wednesday Hump Day special edition. We got a lot to talk about tonight. But before we do that, what's up, Keys, man? How are you, bro?
What's up, bro? I'm good. I'm thriving. How you doing?
That's a good word, thriving. Yeah, man. Today was actually a not so busy day for me. Like I was telling you off air, today my granddaughter's birthday. She turned 7 years old, so she upstairs getting her little present that we got her. You know, we got her like an art set. She asked for an art set, so we found her a nice little art set. Had like 10 to 15 activities in it. So, you know, happy birthday, Riley. We've got a lot to talk about tonight, man. We got the UFC 254 card coming up this weekend. We got Michael Chandler going to be in the house for that. Hopefully he don't have to fight. Then he's a stand-in. Hopefully we get Gaethje versus Khabib. But, you know, man, we're going to start off with a disturbing story, man. You texted me the other day and was like, yo, man, we canceling Mike Perry. And then you told me to read the article on MMA, listen to the interview on MMA Junkie that his ex-wife had gave. And, you know, I had already canceled Mike Perry anyway. But, yeah, man, let's talk about it, man. What did you think about her interview? All right, before we even go in it, these are strictly allegations. This is her word. These are strictly allegations. We have to say that as a disclaimer. So what did you think about her interview and what she said?
Yeah, so I like the fact that you put that out there to say that they were allegations before we started talking about them. That's, you know, that's definitely valid. That's good that you said that, because it could be easy to get carried away without really knowing the whole story. But at the same time, we're going to get into it right now, let you know what I thought. So my thing is this, is that he's a fighter and she's a woman. And what I saw on that interview was a woman who was very uncomfortable talking about, you know, telling her story to, I don't know the gentleman's name from MMA Junkie, but what I saw was a woman and, you know, overall a person who was very uncomfortable telling her side of the story. And to me, you know, I'm very much about body language and, you know, facial gestures and things like that. I read people very well. I feel like she was very, very upset to even be talking about this situation, you know, during her interview. I watched it. It was a video interview. I didn't see the full length thing. I saw like the 12-minute or 13-minute clip that she posted up on her, I think it was on her Instagram. And that's what I saw. So I was really reading into, you know, her facial gestures and such during the interview, and that's what I saw in her face there, and I was really disturbed by that. You know, she described the story, and, you know, they had, you know, she said it took a while. She didn't come out for a while because it took a while for her to get a lot of the evidence together, you know, about the situation and what had happened. So she wanted to, you know, go about it, you know, I guess what she felt was the right time. And, you know, that she had the call from dispatch, you know, the 911 call with Mike Perry's mom, who had, you could, you know, they had the audio on the call and of her saying that she was scared for her life. And I don't know, man. I mean, some guy said to me, you know, I was talking with some of my friends the other day, and, you know, one of my friends had said, you know, he's innocent until proven guilty. And that is true. You know, we said you know, we've had similar conversations. I mean, not about the same, I mean, not about domestic violence, but we have had similar conversations, you know, more serious conversations about, you know, things John Jones has done. And we have, you know, chalked up things he had done until we really knew, you know, innocent until proven, innocent until proven guilty, you know, in those situations. Like I said, not like it's the same thing, but yeah, he is innocent until proven guilty. But, you know, at least for right now, until I hear more, I believe that that she's telling the truth, and I think he did do it. So until we hear more, you know, I'm don't expect me to be tuning into a Mike Perry fight ever again.
And I think my issue is, all right, back in July, he had the incident at the restaurant where he allegedly. Well, it ain't allegedly because the video came out, but you have to say allegedly. He allegedly knocked a man out, and I want to say he fought like three other people. The cops came, and he was really defiant to the cops as well. He had the incident. Well, I ain't going to say it was an incident. The reason I don't mess with Mike Perry is because on his social media, he feels like he has the right to use the N-word, and he's a white guy. That bothers me to no ends. It's like, and then he's so free to call black people the N-word. And that, oh, my God, it drives me crazy. The N-word is one of the ugliest words in the English language. And he chooses to try to be a white guy that, quote unquote, has street cred or permission to use it, and it just rubs me the wrong way. The UFC has to stop turning a blind eye to things of this nature. You can't become known as an organization that doesn't govern or that doesn't regulate, or, you know, I don't want to say regulate, that doesn't take disciplinary actions against their fighters who could possibly be out here hurting other people and hurting themselves as well. That's a bad look for your organization, your company. When that interview came out, when I actually read the write-up also, and I'm with you. I know that it's allegations, but to me, when I heard the part about his mom, normally mothers and parents are very protective of their children, and his mom kind of like sealed it for me that he most likely did everything the young lady said. And the most disturbing part was when she said he ground and pounded her until he got tired. I was like, I mean, I was just picturing that in my head. I'm like, wow, he's doing this to a woman. And he's a pugilist, somebody who gets paid to use their hands as weapons. Me personally, if I was with the UFC, when this interview came out, I would have removed him from the November 21st card. I would be waiting on further investigations or whatever before we did business with Mike Perry again. After the July incident, I read that the UFC said they were not going to entertain any more fights with Mike Perry until he went to alcohol abuse or some kind of rehab. Man, you know, celebrity rehabs can sometimes be a joke. But, man, this article was very disturbing, man. Her interview was very disturbing. And if people that listen to our show, that's one of the main reasons I'm not a Floyd Mayweather fan. Because of his history of domestic abuse, I just can't get behind a pugilist who uses their hands as a means of making money, but also as a means of showing dominance over a woman. And, you know, I know that we have to wait. This is the court of public opinion. That's why we have a show. We're voicing our opinion. And like I said at the beginning of this, all of these are allegations. She is alleging this. So, but I did also read on MMA Junkie where she had pictures of her injuries and stuff, but she didn't want them to publish the pictures. So, man, it's very disturbing, man. The UFC has to do better. Not to plug myself, but I actually just wrote a piece today about the need for the UFC to have a wellness program. They need one if they want to be taken seriously as a major sports organization in this country.
Well, because now I'm glad you said all that. I'm glad that, you know, you call and you've been doing this for a long time. It's been a while that you've been calling out the UFC for, you know, let's say the actions that they haven't taken, you know, in certain situations. And I think this is an eye opening experience for me, this is an eye opening situation. I feel like it's really hit me over the head in a way that makes me say, you know, because. And before I get to that, you know, a couple of years ago, I wouldn't have thought this way, because I just wanted to watch the fights, and I really wasn't too, you know, I wasn't as much into the headlines. You know, I didn't really read the headlines. I didn't really know. Now, I wasn't really emotionally attached to, you know, situations that were coming up or thinking about, you know, other people as much. But I feel like, you know, that was when I was 20, you know, 21. I really wasn't. You know, I'm more caring now, and I like to consider others in the situations that unfold, and I think people should be I'm about accountability, you know, at this age, you know, at 24 years old, I'm about accountability, and I feel like people, you know, need to be held responsible for their actions, but not only that, people need to have some sense of accountability for their actions, and the UFC as an organization needs to take accountability for their fighters. And that is, you know, I feel like, honestly, I'll say this, I cannot get behind that, you know, the type of behavior from the UFC to just say, basically, we don't care, you know, because more or less, that's what they do. They say, we don't care that this situation is going on, we just want to book fights. That's more or less what you're saying, because, you know, there's a line where there's certain things are bigger than MMA. Certain things are bigger than fights. Okay, that's not real life. You know, it's sport, just like sports aren't real life. You know, there are real life issues that arise around these organizations and around the players and around the fighters, you know, and around the executives. There are real life situations that arise, and things need to be attended to. You know, not everything in life is about business and making money. And I think that is something that, as I've gotten older, I've grown to resent about the UFC president, Dana White. I've grown to resent that about him, because I feel like a lot of the time he just wants to make money. And he just wants to put on fights with his fighters and more or less does not care about their conduct outside of the cage. And I feel like that is not honorable. It's not honorable in a man and in a leader. It's not honorable, because you need to hold people accountable and draw a line and say, you cannot act this way. You can't do this. And we won't promote you if you do this. You should not be promoting people and putting people on a pedestal who are out there doing the wrong thing, doing illegal things, getting away with illegal things, and especially putting their hands on women. If your fighters are domestic abusers, they should not be your fighters. Point blank. There is no way around that statement. and I get aggravated because there's these people out there who like to make these points. Well, what about this? To stir you away from the point blank facts of it. You should not put your hands on a woman. That is a point blank fact of it. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You know, I hear something, you know, some people talk and they say, well, what if this situation? No, there is no situation. There is no situation. You shouldn't do it. And people need to take accountability and have some type of sense about them and realize that we are adults and you need to think like an adult, not think about, don't be selfish because any situation could be you or somebody you care about. And I think that's a big downfall in this society is people don't think about other people. They always say, if it isn't me, it doesn't matter. And that's just sad.
Yeah, man. I think a word that you wanted to use that you didn't use is empathy. You know, people, sometimes you have to have empathy for other people. And I empathize with this young lady because the first thing she said in her interview was she's not doing this to hurt him. She's still protecting him. You know, most people that are victims of domestic abuse always, they protect their abuser. And even in her statement, I was like, wow, she's still protecting him. And that's just a common trait. And that comes with the abuse. But we're not going to kick a dead horse on this. Hopefully she'll get the help she need. Hopefully telling her story is, relieving some pressure off of her that she's getting that 18,000-pound gorilla off her back. And hopefully the UFC will take this seriously, man, that because one of the things I wrote about Keys, not to give too much of the piece away, is if you look at all the major sports, NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, they all have player guidelines. If you commit this act, this will happen to you. The UFC has nothing like that in play, man. So guess what? Fighters feel like they can do and say anything they want with no repercussions. Until the UFC does something or put something in writing, I think this could become more of an issue, man. UFC is a sport that we should be talking about the fighters and their performances in the octagon. Because they are stars. But are they as big as LeBron James, Tom Brady, Mookie Betts, Clayton Kershaw? Are they as big as those guys? Maybe Conor is, John Jones to a certain extent, but not most UFC fighters are that big. So why can't you, as the UFC, put something out there to protect your company and protect your fighters against themselves, you know, and still professionalism in them. When you are somebody that's getting paid to do a job, you are considered a professional. I go to work every day for the Department of Veterans Administration. I might not be an athlete, but I'm still considered a professional. Hopefully her, you know, once again, you know, that, you know, she feels better. She's feeling not vindicated, but she said she was putting that out there to help other people that's been abused. And sometimes reading somebody's story or watching somebody's story helps a victim proceed with their life or lead their current situation. So hopefully she helps somebody. And hopefully the UFC down the road will do something about, you know, come up with some kind of moral code or wellness program for their fighters. This weekend we got Khabib versus Gaethje.
Wait. I'm gonna cue. I got a caller. I'm gonna cue him in. Yo, Evan, this you?
How's it going, guys?
Hey, did you hear the topic we're just talking about? Did you hear it?
Yeah, I heard a little bit.
So, yeah, we're just talking about the situation with Mike Perry
and his ex-wife.
Right.
Any thoughts on that?
Immediately, I think the UFC needs to put it out there that they're handling the situation. You know, like they need to just say something, be like, Mike Perry is suspended. And I understand he deserves to be fired. Like, these aren't just simple allegations. Like, these are real. She came out, you know, it's being reported by a reliable source. Like, we need to take this seriously. And, you know, with that, they need to take action. They need to show us that they actually care about, you know, like humans. We're human beings. You know, I get Mike Perry's a, you know, he's a fighter and a, you know, he makes the money and all that bullshit. But at the end of the day, we're humans and, you know, got to take care of each other.
Yeah. What I was saying, Evan, not to regurgitate everything I said, is the UFC has to stop turning a blind eye to bad behavior. They have turned a bad eye to all bad behavior. Conor McGregor, Nate Diaz in Vegas, all of John Jones, all the Octagon stuff, the Conor McGregor busting, you know, the Colby Covington remarks towards Tyron Woodley after the fight. And now this thing with Mike Perry. The UFC can't continue to be idle and silent, because silence today equals compliance. You can't be silent against a bad act, because if you are silent against a bad act today, people say you support it or you compliant with it. And the UFC, they not new to this game no more, to this sports game no more. They've been in operation over 15 years. It's time to start taking a stance, time to start making your fighters be professionals. It's time. And this week, more than any other week, should be the green light for Dana White and Zuffa to say, let's do this. Because basically, they can actually do it because the fighters don't have a union. What are they going to do?
Mm-hmm.
What are they going to do? Go to their union? What are they going to do? Strike? No. No, they're not going to do that. Because if that was the case, they would already have a union in place. But the fighters are so selfish and worried about their own self that it's all about them. So Dana White and Zuffa can actually do this. And I bet you, if ESPN was to get behind it, if ESPN tells the UFC, you will do this, I bet you next week you'll see some saying the UFC will institute a wellness program immediately or starting 1 January 2021. I'm just saying.
I agree wholeheartedly.
Well, man, look at this. Like you said before, the reason – okay, so – you said before how none of these fighters, you said they're stars, but none of these guys are, you know, nearly, they're not LeBron and, you know, all these other, you know, sports athletes, and really not even close, besides maybe McGregor. And, you know, I think an important thing to add to that is these are the types of things that will never, like, these are the types of situations that make that so. Like, this is the reason why they will never be that level. This is the reason why society is never going to see UFC as a legitimate sport. This is the reason why it's never going to become, well, it could, but this would be a very, I believe situations like this just add to the stigma about MMA fighters and about combat sports athletes in general. But mainly MMA fighters, because there's a lot of stories like this. A lot of these guys, I mean, look at BJ Penn. Look at all the wacko stuff that he's doing now. I'm not going to be filtered and not say that, you know, that dude's been off the rails for like the past 3 years. Like, he's getting into fights with bouncers and stuff. Like, I know McGregor does similar things, but I'm not condoning that. I'm saying both of them. It's both. Those are the types of headlines that come up when you search for these fighters. And that's why, you know, the general public is just going to keep laughing at MMA as a sport. Like, yeah, a lot of these, you know, journalists and stuff, you know, they want to say that MMA is getting bigger. Oh, it's grown so much in, you know, however many years. Great. But they're still laughing at us. Like, and they're going to keep laughing, because all you see when you hear about UFC is always attached to some wacko headline. Diego Sanchez, wacko headline. John Jones, wacko headline. McGregor, circus headline. This guy we're talking about, Mike Perry, you know, beats his wife. That's terrible. I mean, terrible look. And it's just an allegation, great, but it shouldn't even be, you know, it shouldn't even be an allegation in the first place. You know, these guys should be better people. They should just be better people. That's point blank, period. And then those aren't even the only stories. There's even plenty more stories than that. Look at Greg Hardy. You search up his name. Look at his history. They, you know, in his case, he hasn't done anything since he's been in the UFC, which is actually, I'm happy to be able to say that, at least as far as I know. His history is in his past, but these guys are doing things in the present. And that's what makes MMA and the UFC look bad, is dudes like, but you never hear about this, though. You never hear about this, you know, no hear about this one championship. You know, no one championship fighters, you never hear about this. Why? So I think really what ends up happening is it's the UFC. That's what it's in America. They're laughing at the UFC. Yeah, they're getting bigger, but they're getting laughed at the same time by people that would allow them to get bigger, even bigger than they are. They're getting laughed at because these are the pathetic stories that are coming out about these fighters. When you see headlines about the UFC, it's attached to some ridiculous story about some situation that should have never happened. That is the truth of it. And then you have these, you know, you have these people out there that want to say, you know, look at each side of the situation. You know, you have people out there saying that, you know, let McGregor fight at Dallas Cowboys Stadium. You know, let tons of people go to the fight. You know, and it's just because it goes back to what I was saying earlier, a little bit off topic, but it goes back to what I was saying earlier, that a lot of things are bigger than MMA. And, you know, there's real life situations, like you said, Lee, that could be, the UFC could tend to these things in much better ways. They could be organizing groups to tend to these situations in much better ways and have more resources, you know, to make sure, you know, to maintain their fighters, to make sure that things like this don't just keep on repeating, because they do seem to just keep on repeating. You know, a UFC fighter, you know, there's some wacko headline about a UFC fighter. It seems about every 2-3 months now. If that's not the truth, then, I mean, go look it up. About every 2-3 months now that there's some wacko headline that comes out about one of these fighters. And that's just sad, because that's the way that the sport gets looked at, as a joke. Because all these guys are just, it's just a bunch of criminal activity. And that's just sad. You can talk about what could be done all day, but what should be done is they should just be better. That's what should be done. They should just be better and hold themselves accountable.
Yeah, and I'm going to end it on this. World Wrestling Entertainment. Wrestling. Vince McMahon has a wellness program for his professional wrestlers. Now, everybody knows that basically wrestling, the ending is scripted, the matches are choreographed, but guess what? Vince McMahon still wants you to hold yourself at a higher standard in his world of entertainment. So if wrestling can do it, come on, UFC, get with the program. But, hey, let's get into it, man. You know, enough about that. You know, but we did have to talk about it. It was something that's that came out this week, and we like to talk about the major headlines and stories that, you know, affect the UFC, MMA, you know, and that just happened to be one of the part of the hot button issue of the week. But look, man, we got a big card coming up this weekend. But before we get into the card and our predictions, let's talk about the guy that's standing in for that's acting as a substitute just in case somebody pulls out. Michael Chandler, is there a chance that we see Chandler fight this week? Please.
Evan, you want to go first?
Sure, thank you. I don't think we'll see Chandler fight. I think Justin and Khabib, both professionals, this is a huge opportunity for both to kind of cement legacy for either one. So we're definitely going to obviously see Chandler weigh in, and he's going to get that first weigh in for the UFC, which is going to look cool, you know, just kind of a little spotlight moment. But I think he'll be a fan for this one.
Keith?
It's a tough call. I mean, I always expect, you know, I always expect the primary fight to take place. I'm always a fan who has faith in the original fight up until it's officially off. You know, I didn't even believe the last time Khabib and Ferguson were supposed to fight. I didn't even, you know, when they canceled that and saying, you know, Khabib was stuck in Russia, I didn't even believe that until, you know, much later after, you know, the rest of people, you know, really gave into it. I was like, nope, the fight's still happening. It's still happening. Somehow the fight's going to happen. So, I mean, I expect to see Khabib versus Gaethje, but, you know, given Khabib's track record of, you know, miraculously falling out of fights, I think, you know, I definitely think Gaethje makes weight and he'll be ready to go. But I think if anything, Khabib could miss weight or some freak situation could arise and he could fall out of the fight and we could end up seeing Gaethje versus Chandler for whatever they would do with that. I don't know if they would put that for the belt or interim belt. Like I said, I still think we see Khabib and Gaethje, but I'm not ruling out the possibility that Khabib somehow falls out of the fight.
I think if Khabib was to get hurt or something was to happen to him, there is no way the UFC would strip him of the belt. Unlike what they did to Tony Ferguson when he got hurt going into the Khabib fight. When he tore his knee up doing media work for the company, not like he tore his knee up at training or effing around. He wrecked his knee doing media work for the UFC, and they stripped him of the belt. And Khabib ended up fighting Quinta for the belt. I think both guys make it to Saturday. I think Chandler's first fight will probably be against Tony Ferguson, with the winner going on to face Khabib for the belt. Although Khabib did say this week that after the Gaethje fight, if he was to win, the only fight that intrigues him is GSP. I think that's a cop-out for him because he knows that the fight that needs to happen is the fight between him and Tony Ferguson. That's the fight that needs to happen. So, but I don't see him. I think I see him probably balking at the winner of Poirier versus Connor. I probably see him balking at that because basically he dominated both of them. So I could probably see him saying, nah, that ain't good enough. I could probably see him maybe accepting the winner of Ferguson and Chandler, if that's the fight that the UFC makes. But I think he is definitely shooting for a GSP fight. I don't think GSP can get down to 155 and be effective. So I'm really not interested in that fight. But if it was to happen, of course, I would watch it. But you never know what the UFC, like he said without saying it, is you have to expect the unexpected sometimes. Sometimes things just happen, and you just have to go with the flow. But hopefully Justin and Khabib make it to Saturday, and we get to unify the belt Saturday. So let's jump into the main card, man. Where y'all want to start at?
So one thing that one thing that I noticed that I'm so curious about is I don't know what will happen with Ferguson and Ferguson and Chandler. I don't know if that fight comes to play or what happens there. But I had watched an interview with Chandler from a couple of days ago, and he was even saying that he would be willing to be a fill-in for the McGregor and Poirier 2 fight if one of those guys were to fall out. So I think that could even be in play. I mean, I feel like if he makes weight and then doesn't end up fighting this weekend, I wouldn't doubt that they, have him on the table to fill in for that fight. So that could happen. Ferguson, I don't know what'll happen. I definitely want to see him fight soon, but who knows? I know he wanted to fight Poirier. Khabib's manager did tweet like last week or the week before that he was working on the biggest lightweight fight in UFC history. And I mean, and I think he tagged Khabib in it. So it obviously involves him. And he said that it didn't involve GSP. I thought he said it didn't involve GSP or Tony Ferguson. So I don't know what would be I have no idea who he could be alluding to in that. If neither of those guys, I don't know who else. Even though I don't think Khabib GSP would be the biggest fight in lightweight history, nor do I think it would sell more than Khabib Ferguson would. I don't know who he could be alluding to with that. I just brought that out because it was parallel to what you were talking about. Do you guys have any idea who he might have been referring to there?
Who you think, Evan?
I honestly don't know. I really don't. I've been trying to think about that one, but as you were talking, I can't even think. Give me some more time. You can go, Lee.
If I'm going to jump out on a limb with this one, you said it's at lightweight, right?
Yeah, he said it would be the biggest fight in UFC. Okay.
To be the biggest fight in UFC history or lightweight history, it has to involve Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor is the guy that brings the fans out, that people buy the fight to see. But I'm not going to go that route. I'm going to go this route. Because I have been saying this probably for the last 6 to 8 months. I think if Max Holloway goes up, who wouldn't want to see Max Holloway and Khabib? Max has great takedown defense, which is probably top three in the UFC in takedown defense. He has hands. I think his body can't do 145 no more. I think 145 is probably becoming a stretch. Would people want to see that? Would people want to see Max Holloway versus Khabib? You got the former champ taking on the current champ coming up in weight. And he'll be able to do a full training camp at that weight. I think that's the only – I think that's – outside of Chandler – it's either going to be Chandler or Max. I just don't see it being Conor, man, although we know Conor draws numbers. So I'm going to go out on the limb and say Max Holloway.
And I just don't see how it would be McGregor either, because while I do think that a rematch of those two guys could be the biggest fight in UFC lightweight history, it could be. At the same time, like, Khabib's manager has not shown interest in that rematch. I'm surprised that he would, you know, he hates on McGregor like every second he gets. I would be shocked that he would even refer to that fight in such a way. You know, it's because it shows him a lot of respect in a way to include him in talking of the fight in that fashion. I'm surprised that he would even do that, you know, to even give him the recognition in that way. But so I have no idea. I mean, I can try to pull up the tweet. That guy does tweet quite a bit, but he definitely wrote that. So I'm interested to know what that might have been. Maybe he was just bluffing, but I don't know. There's only so many options for the biggest fight. And to me, GSP isn't even a lightweight fight. He doesn't even fight a lightweight. So I don't even know how that's even relevant. But yeah, let's dive into the card. I'm gonna pull up the card now. Let's get this going.
Ali's gassing up his fighters, though. He always gassing up his fighters and saying they're going to be in the biggest fights and they're going to make the most money. He always saying that. So, you know, maybe he was just throwing it out there to do what we're doing, have people talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, I know that. I mean, especially where he says that and then, I mean, you see the headline. Khabib did an interview, and they asked him about McGregor, and he said he thinks that chapter is closed, and you know he really doesn't care. So I'm just surprised that his manager would have that kind of tone about, you know, that potential fight, and that he would even be working on that fight if Khabib turns around in an interview and basically, you know, hints to us that fight is nowhere near, you know, a reality. You know, I even heard that they were supposed to do The Ultimate Fighter, and he shut that down. You know, that fell through somehow.
Oh, sure
so
did.
I guess that was supposed to be, you know, the that was supposed to be the path to the rematch, and I guess that fell through for one reason or another. So, I mean, I don't see how that. It would just be very confusing to me if that fight was somehow on the horizon. I'd be very surprised. I mean, the fact that, like, if they were gonna do McGregor Poirier 2 in November, like on that November 19th or 21st card that McGregor wanted, and then you would have basically had Khabib and McGregor headlining back-to-back cards, which I think those are back-to-back cards, and then say they both won on back-to-back cards. I think that would be an intriguing situation. You know, it would have been similar to how, you know, Cormier and Stipe Miocic both, you know, had pretty dominant performances and defended their titles on the same night, you know, live from Boston, Massachusetts at the TD Bank North Garden, where Keys was in attendance and witnessed history. You know, it would have been similar to that. But, yeah, I mean, that would have been cool, but, of course, that's not happening. So, whatever, you know, we'll figure that out down the line. And I have the card right here.
Let's go. Let's get it.
All right, so let's take a look at this. So, I mean, we even have – this card is so good that it's like – I mean, the fact that, like, Eastern time, the fight – like, the main card starts at 2 o'clock. So the main card starts at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. But being that, like, the first fight that I'm interested in is on the early prelims, which starts at 11 a.m. I may just have to get up early and just start watching these fights. I don't know. I mean, because Nathaniel Wood versus Casey Kenney is the early prelims main event, and that's pretty much where from there I pretty much want to watch every fight on the rest of the card. So it's I don't know. When do you guys want to start for predictions?
It don't matter to me.
You want to just do the main card?
Yeah, let me see how much time we got. We got about 15 minutes.
All right. How's this? We'll start with Stefan Struve versus Tai Tuivasa prelim main event.
All right.
I'll kick this one off. I feel like both of these guys, I don't really I feel like this is really like a neither of these guys have really impressed me recently. I don't really know. I'll go with Ty Tuivasa on this one. Just because I feel like he's a bit more durable. What I've seen of Stefan Struve recently, I feel like he retired and came back, and I don't really know if it doesn't really seem like he wants to fight anymore. And I feel like Ty Tuivasa is a bit more durable of a fighter. Neither one of them really impresses me as a heavyweight overall, but I'll go with Ty Tuivasa, probably, I'll probably say third round TKO.
I'm going with Stefan Struve, second round submission. I think Stefan Struve is one of those guys that he's very, very long. He's very, very skilled. And if you look, he's had 45 fights compared to 13 for Tuivasa. Tuivasa has power, but against Struve, he's going to have to close the distance. So that means you are going to have to take some punishment closing the distance. And then when you close the distance, you got to be effective at closing once you get inside. But I'm going to go with Stefan Struve, man. I think he has more tools in the toolbox. He's a lot more experienced. So I'm going to say Stefan Struve by second round submission.
Evan, you have any predictions?
This one was a funny one because a lot of people were so like surprised that it was happening because they thought Ty got cut, but it was just a joke that he made. Like he replied to a comment and he said he got cut, and everyone thought he got cut. But I'm gonna go with Ty as well. I've noticed on some YouTube videos that he is now training at AKA with like DC, Habib, all them. So I'm really interested to see his his game, his evolution. And the dude's only 27. I think a lot of people forget that. He's still fairly young. With only 13 pro fights, he's still got time. And like you said, heavyweights hit hard. So, honestly, anything can happen. I'm going to go with Ty. I think it's probably a decision just to play it safe. But, Ty.
All right, so right into the next one, we have Magomed Ankalaev versus Ion Kudalaba, light heavyweight bout. I'll kick this one off. I'm really not familiar with the Ankalaev guy. I guess he's number 11 ranked at light heavyweight. I don't even know really who this is. All I know is that he fought Ion Kudalaba last time, and they tried to fight like 5 times, and it just keeps on not working out. I'm gonna go with Ion Kudalaba though. Just as Evan says, just off of the relevancy bias and the familiarity bias. I really don't know this other guy, so I'd feel kind of like throwing into the wind a little bit if just picking someone I have no idea from a hole in the wall. So I'll go with Kudalaba by unanimous decision. I think it'll be a good fight.
I'm going with Kudalaba also. The only reason I'm going with him is because I think they're going to have a rubber match. These two guys really don't like each other. The last fight ended in a kind of a controversy, and that's why they're doing the rematch. So Kudalaba, I want to say he actually complained that it was an early stoppage in that fight. So I think he's going to come out with something to prove in this fight. I like him to win this fight probably by decision. And we get the rubber match probably early next year to finally put this little rivalry to bed. So I'm going with Kudalaba in this one. What about you, Evan?
I hate to do it, but I'm going with Ankalaev. I think he is just overall the better fighter. For some reason, I just and I've said this to a few other people. I don't like QT Bella at 205. I don't know how much he cuts to make 205, but he just doesn't seem like, you know, he really belongs at that weight class. Cardio is very is very suspect, and, you know, a little chinny. But, yeah, I'm going to go with Ankalaev. I think he's going to come out fast, and I think he's just going to put a pace on QT Bella and either, like, drag him out and kind of make him tire and, like, submit him or something, or just get a quick finish.
Hey, Keys, before you go, I ain't gonna lie to you guys. The next two fights, I barely know anybody in the next two fights. So if we want to skip those, I don't have a problem with them. But if we want to make predictions on them, we can. I think that's Lauren Murphy that's fighting in Shakarova. And you got Wolfen versus Hawes. But I know that Evan does know about this Hawes guy. I know Evan do know about him.
I think we're going to we're going to get to that one. Let Evan walk us through how Philip Hawes wins that middleweight bout, because I don't know anything. The Lauren Murphy, Valila Shakirova, I looked her up on SureDog. She's on a 3-fight win streak. This is her UFC debut. I don't know enough about her besides that. I'm going to go with Lauren Murphy, though, because she's number 5 flyweight in the world, and she has UFC experience. These UFC debuts sometimes, you know, they really don't go the way that these debuts want them to go when they face, you know, this level of competition. I could be wrong, but I'm going to go with Lauren Murphy, unanimous decision. And Evan, do you want to you guys feel free to make a prediction. Then Evan, walk us through this Philip Hawes guy.
So, Phil Hawes, he's been around, you know, not for too long. He's a middleweight, and he was actually on the Contender Series back in 2017, but he got head kicked KO'd by Julian Marquez. So I think kind of people forgot about him. And then, you know, kind of went back to, like, he actually got signed to Bellator for a fight and then did a stint in some other promotion. But then he was given his chance 3 years later, back on the Contender Series. And, you know, here we go. Dude's a powerhouse, you know, knockout artist. You know, his base is wrestling, so, you know, there's always that. But I think it's a great addition to the main card. Because the guy he's fighting, not for nothing, is 4-0, where, like, Hawes is 8-2. So just makes you a little, you know, a little worried about that matchmaking. But, yeah, I would take Phil Hawes by knockout if, you know, anything at all. Just go Phil Hawes.
Okay, you know what? Hold on, Keys. You know what? I really don't have a problem with them putting this fight on the main card, because I know that me and Keys has talked about this before. Sometimes you have to put your up-and-comers on the main card so that people can become familiar with them. You can't become familiar with a person if they're fighting on the early prelims, or they're opening the prelims up, because most people normally not watching those fights until you get probably to, like, the main event of the prelims. So if this guy Hawes is what you say he is, and he put on a performance that you think he's going to put on, I think this is a good spot for him on the main card, although I probably would have had him probably leading off the main card instead of being in the middle of the main card. But I'm looking forward to seeing what he does Saturday. All right, Keys, you can roll.
I agree. If I can just cut off real fast, I agree
sure.
on the Phil Hawes thing, the placement. And also, I just wanted to on you have to give the chances to the fighters because when Zabit fought Kyle Bochniak back when I forget which card it was, Zabit was supposed to be the opening fight on the Fight Pass prelims at like 4:30, and something happened. I think it was the Conor thing when Conor threw the dolly, and Zabit got the opening main card bout. And now look at him, ranked number 2 at featherweight. So just to add to your point.
All right, so we have Volkov. We have Alexander Volkov versus your boy Walt Harris. Walt Harris' last fight, he lost to Overeem. Volkov's last fight, I honestly don't remember Volkov's last fight. Last time
Curtis
I even remember him fighting.
Curtis Blaydes, yeah.
He got ragdolled for 25 minutes.
Okay, so both of these guys didn't have a great ending of their last fight. With this one, I'm going to say, I mean, both of these guys kind of like to just stand and box. I never really seen much else from either one of these guys.
No,
it's fine, I got it. I think Volkov, you know, he's a guy I think he gets overlooked by when he takes guys that are lower than him. I think a lot of times, because after the Derek Lewis fight, I feel like fans kind of like think he's a stepping stone or something, or fighters might even think he's a stepping stone, but I still think he's a really high level guy. I'm gonna go with Volkov to win this fight by unanimous decision. Actually, yeah, I'm gonna go a unanimous decision. But I will be rooting for Walt Harris though. I definitely want to see Walt Harris win. Hopefully, Harris wins by stoppage. But I think Volkov is just a more experienced guy.
I interviewed Walt Harris, so I would never pick against him. I think the layoff due to his daughter's tragedy, I think that probably hurt him. And his fight against Alistair Overeem, I probably wouldn't have took Overeem as my welcome back to the Octagon fight. I probably would have tried to take somebody, fringe top 10 contender, so that I could get back in there, but he didn't do that. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with losing to probably one of the best heavyweights in mixed martial arts history. But I would never pick against Walt Harris. I think this is the fight that he rebounds. He puts on a great performance, and he wins via split decision.
Evan?
It's such a tough fight to pick because,
yeah,
you know, I want to say Volkov. Like, I want to say Volkov, but Walt Harris, you know, like we talked about, his last performance, you know, was affected by, you know, the passing of his, you know, stepdaughter, so that obviously. I mean, he looked good in the beginning. It's just he wasn't in the proper shape to continue at the pace that he pushed. And, you know, he went in there extremely heavy-hearted. Also, I didn't realize, but Walt Harris is 37. I thought he was fairly young, but and I don't want to say 37 is old, but for some reason I thought he was old, younger. But regardless, both guys have something to prove. Both guys do not want to continue, you know, on a losing streak. You know, so just I'm gonna go with Volkov by decision, but I won't be surprised if Walt Harris touches the chin and Volkov goes down.
All right, so co-main event. This is a number one contender fight for the middleweight. I feel like the winner of this will be the next fight, Adesanya. Israel Adesanya already called out Jared Cannonier. And this, I didn't actually know, it was the number one versus the number two. And I love these kind of fights. We really don't often get the number one versus the number two. These are my favorite kind of fights, and I feel like these two guys are the best two guys in the middleweight division. So this is like a true title eliminated. You know what I mean? You don't have like a number two versus a number seven and they say the winner fights for the title. No, this is the number one versus the number two. He's the true two best guys. Whitaker versus Jared Cannonier. I'm going to give it to you like this. I'm taking Whitaker. I'm taking Whitaker by unanimous decision. I think I've called all unanimous decisions for all these fights. Wow. I hope it doesn't go that way. I hope there's more finishes. But, you know, I do think Whitaker wins unanimous decision. I think if he uses his game plan and uses versus Till, I think he'll do just fine. If he mixes his boxing with his takedowns, I don't think Cannonier is going to like that, being taken down, going for the legs, shooting for the upper body, and maybe even Whitaker throws in some body kicks in there. If he can mix up his game like that, I think it could do enough to wear out Cannonier, where I think Cannonier will be looking for like a first or second round knockout. If Whitaker can tower him out and you know, switching up his game, I think he gets through it and he gets a unanimous decision, probably 30-27, 30-28. Yeah, that's my pick. Whitaker, unanimous decision. And we get a rematch with Adesanya.
Man, this is a tough one. Because I'm thinking back to Whitaker's last two fights, man. And I'm thinking about how wild he was throwing his punches. And you can't be wild and wild against a guy with Cannonier's power, because you will get put to sleep. Man, if Whitaker hasn't tightened up his punching and his striking, I see Cannonier damn near knocking his head off his shoulders with probably a right hook or an uppercut. But that being said, I think Whitaker is going to come in there with a chip on his shoulder, trying to show everybody that he deserves another shot of being a champ. I think he's going to come in with an aggressive cardio pace to try to tire out Cannonier. But being that it's only a 3-round fight, I don't think that strategy is going to work. But I'm going to take Whitaker via split decision because Cannonier is not an easy win. Although everything in me wants to pick Cannonier, I am going to go with Whitaker. But in my DraftKings, I'm going with Cannonier. All right, Evan.
You already know my thoughts on this one. I will continue. Cannonier.
Which one of y'all let a drive through?
Cannonier is going to hurt this man. Jared is gonna. I'm sorry. I understand and I admit it. Whitaker is the better fighter, well-rounded fighter. You know, he's got more. I think you can even say that Whitaker has more tools. Whitaker should have every advantage to win this fight. It's just the power advantage for Jared, a guy coming down from heavyweight from heavyweight to light heavyweight to middleweight. You know, he's cutting weight, but he's looking good. He's not he admits that he was never a real heavyweight, but like his power hurt actual heavyweights, and now he's down in middleweight. And I hate being the guy that's just like, oh, you know, power, you can't just go up by power. But I can't see Jared not winning this fight for some reason. I think he's going to hurt Whitaker. It's going to be sad because people love Whitaker. He's like Holloway. People love to defend him and, you know, cheer for him. But he's going to sleep on Saturday. Jared by TKO, like first round.
Wow. First round.
Early. Getting it done.
I love whatever come with these hot takes, Keys. All right, Keith.
Yeah. But the thing is this, though, is that I really don't think that you're going to see Whitaker get knocked out like for the same reason that he got knocked out versus Adesanya. I just don't think you're going to see that. I didn't see his fight versus Till. I only read through the highlights. I read through the highlights of the fight. I didn't see the fight, so I didn't see how he was swinging wildly like you said, Lee. If he was, then that's not good. But at the same time, like with a such a high level striker like Till, I would have thought that if he was swinging wildly versus Till, Till would have caught him on the chin too. And we know Till has power too. Till being a natural light heavyweight and not a middleweight. But I would have thought Till would have caught him on the chin if he was, swinging recklessly like that. And apparently that didn't happen. So, yeah, I just don't think he's going to get caught for that same reason like he did versus Adesanya. I just feel like that fight, Adesanya was in his head and he felt threatened, versus an undefeated guy. And he fought emotional. And that's why he got knocked out. I just don't think he's going to go into this fight like that. If he does get knocked, not saying he can't get knocked out, he can, but I just don't think it's going to be for the same reason if he does get caught. Title fight. So we have Habib Nurmagomedov versus Justin Gaethje for the undisputed lightweight title. It is time. I'm not going to start this one off. I need to still gather my thoughts on this one. Lee or Evan, do you want to kick this one off?
Go ahead, Evan.
This one is you could arguably say this is the best lightweight title fight. Honestly, lightweight fight. I really think that. I just think the matchup is just perfect. One guy, a champion, still undefeated. Then you have a wrecking ball in Justin Gaethje. It's a recipe for madness. It's a recipe for a great fight. But at the end of the day, I'll say this. I want Justin Gaethje to win because I just would like to see him win. But I think Khabib gets it done. I think if it's going to be a finish, I think it's going to be like a third round, like submission TKO. For Khabib, if it's not a finish, then it's just a decision for Khabib. But I hope for Gaethje, but I don't know. Just gotta go with Khabib. Gotta stay safe with the bet, with the pick.
I'm going with
Don't
the
be Ben now, Evan. Don't be Ben. Don't be over there, Ben. I heard what you said.
Never.
We talked about this.
I'm going with the upset, man. I'm going with Justin Gaethje, man. I don't know why I feel so strongly about this, but I just have a gut feeling that Gaethje is going to get the job done. I think Khabib is a one-trick pony, and that one trick is actually very, very fucking awesome. I don't like to cuss on the show, but it's true. His one trick is a fucking awesome trick because he's going to come in there and he's going to take you down, maul you, punch you while you're down, knee you while you're down, and look to submit you. I think Gaethje, if he can stop the takedowns and be able to get back to his feet, I think he can catch Khabib. I think he can catch Khabib coming in, going for a shoot. I think he's definitely going to dominate the stand-up game. And it's just something to me. I really don't know why I feel this way, but I do, and I feel strongly about it, man. I'm going with Justin Gaethje, man. Fourth round knockout.
Whoa. Dropping a bomb on us with that, Lee. Absolute bomb. Said fourth round knockout for Justin Gaethje. Wow. Okay. The highlight.
And new.
And new. Chris Jericho, my guy Chris Jericho, I used to watch wrestling, used to host the highlight reel. I think it was called the highlight reel. Shout out to Chris Jericho. Yeah, we're talking about Justin Gaethje, the highlight, fourth round knockout. Okay, so I wasn't sold on Gaethje either because I was arguing, I think, with Evan like a couple weeks ago, and I was saying, when have we seen Because everyone talks about Gaethje's wrestling, and I said, when have we seen Gaethje's wrestling to really legitimately say that? But then I watched I watched a lot of his footage and leading up to this fight, and a lot of the things he's saying, I feel like a big thing going into this fight is his mentality. I think his mentality going into this is being underlooked, is being, you know, it's very underrated here. And one thing he pointed out was he said how he felt, you know, he said Dustin Poirier won that interim title versus Max Holloway, and he put the belt on, and you could see it on his face. He said you could see it on his face. He felt like he won. He felt like he was already there. And he was like, I got the belt, and I didn't even put it on. He was like, I didn't want that. He was like, the job isn't done. He was like, what I have is still in front of me. He said, when I put the interim belt, when they tried to give me the interim belt, I didn't put it on. But even when I knew that I won the fight and I was the interim champion, I didn't feel anything. He said, I didn't think anything in my head when I won that fight. I thought absolutely nothing because I know there's still more to do. And, bro, when I heard him say that, I was like, wow. I was like, wow. Like, that was a bombshell. You know, I was like, oh, my goodness. This man is going rogue. This man is going rogue, people. Going rogue for this fight. And all the different ways that Justin Gaethje just inflicts damage. You know, he said he's gonna create a circle of death. He said he's going to create a circle of death. Lee, I'm gonna send you this video right after we get off the air, that broke down where actually Gaethje broke down all his reasons or all his angles of how he plans to win the fight. And it was like five or six different reasons, and they spent a couple minutes on each one. And that video really got me, man. I think that really got me. You know, I'm taking Gaethje for this one, and I think it's gonna be. I like where Lee is going with it. I think Gaethje, you know, I'm gonna go fifth round though. I'm gonna say Gaethje wins by fifth round stoppage. I think it'll be a fifth round TKO, I'm going to say, for Gaethje. I think Gaethje, I'm going to have Gaethje in a fifth round mauling of Khabib. That's what I think is going to happen. It's going to be, he's going to finish him with his own move, kind of like how Nunes finished Holly Holm with her signature head kick. And nobody saw that coming. I know those are two different fights, but I'm just saying, in that same style. Gaethje by fifth round mauling is how the fight will end. And I'm very interested to see how he uses his folk style wrestling against Khabib Sambo. I'm very interested to see that because I've been looking into those two things and the comparison, and I'm really interested to see how that plays out. You know, I know Khabib is amazing. He's excellent, and it's very likely he can win this fight. And I still think it's very likely he wins this fight, but I'm going with Gaethje underdog, fifth round TKO. And that's what it is.
Okay.
All right.
So we got Evan going with Khabib. We got me going with Gaethje. We got Keith going with Gaethje. We got Keith going with Whitaker. I'm going with Whitaker, and Evan is going with Cannoneer, and Keys and Evan are going with Volkov, and they're going with Walt Harris. So, there's a lot going to be going on Saturday, man. I'm looking forward to this card. Praying that all the fighters can make weight and make it to the octagon Saturday. And this card is definitely going to be one of the strongest cards to close out this year. And I'm definitely looking forward to it. Any last words for anybody, or y'all want me to close it out?
Nah, you got it. I'm definitely looking forward to the fights. I'm excited. I just want to say too, for my last words, that I can literally say that last weekend's UFC card was, now this is just my opinion, that was the best UFC card I've ever watched. Ever.
Ever?
ever, with no even close second. That was the best card. I don't even know what. Maybe I hit my head off a wall or something, and I was having amnesia. And I don't remember these other cards. But that card was unbelievable. From start to finish, well, I started it with the prelim main event. That was the first. I tried to catch it even earlier, but I things couldn't happen. But I turned it on with the prelim main event. I was blown away by that, by the prelim main event. I forget those two guys' last name, but I wish I could because they were amazing. That was a great fight.
I'm looking it up
now. The first
fight
in the main card. What happened?
I said I'm about to look it up now. Go ahead. Keep talking.
Yeah, so the prelim main event, those two guys blew me away. Then the first fight in the main card, that blew me away. The next fight, that was a six-fight main card. Every single fight on there, I was very happy with. I saw my boy James Krause fought on the main card. I was very happy with his fight versus the Brazilian fighter. I forget his name. I want to say he's a Brazilian fighter. But that fight, I loved that fight. I can't remember them all off the top of my head, but those fights were excellent. Ortega and Zombie, I loved it. Man, that was my favorite card ever. I don't know why, but I just feel like the fights delivered. I watched seven unbelievable fights, and I was drinking some rosé, watching it. Maybe it was the wine, but man, I loved it. I didn't even get off the couch. I was off the couch for 5% of those seven fights. I was probably off the couch for a combined 20 minutes during that, like, 3 or 4 hours that I was watching fights. And I even watched, Lee, you'd be happy, you'd be proud of this, I even watched the boxing fights after that. And I was loving the boxing fights. I even watched that. I watched Vasily
Lomachenko's
fight.
Yep.
I even watched that. I was even watching the boxing fights. And I said, man, Lee would be proud. I'm over here watching the boxing fights. Would you look at me now? Before soon after, I'm going to be a boxing aficionado too.
You know what, Keys? You know why you probably would say that card is probably one of the best cards ever? Is because there were rarely any big names on the card. And Looking at the decisions of the fight, looking at the scores of the fight, all the fights were really, really close. I mean, except, you know, Crute won by knockout, Andrade won by knockout, which was a shocker to me. She definitely broke down Chookagian. But looking at everybody fight went, almost all the fights went the distance, and they were all pretty close. Except the Park Phillips fight, he won 30-25. 30-25. So, but normally that's how it works, though, man. When you get a card and you really don't know too many of the fighters, you tend to pay a little bit more better attention. Because, you know, we want to be connected to the fighters. Just looking at the scores, man, all these fights were super, super close. 29-28, 28-29, 28-29, 29-27, 29-28, 29-27. This one that's 30-25, that's crazy. I'm trying to figure out how they got there. 30-25, 30-25, 30-25.
They must have had two rounds scored 10-8, and then they probably gave him one round 10-9. So he must have had two 10-8 rounds and one 10-9. That would be the way I would think that was what would happen.
Okay. So, but yeah, man, got a big card this weekend, man. I'm so looking forward to it. Everybody get out and watch the fights. If you get out in the public place, make sure you wear a mask, practice social distancing. The coronavirus is still a real thing, contrary to what a lot of people are saying.
We got to talk about that, too. Next show, I forgot to bring it up, but I need to bring it up with you. We need to talk about what happened with your boy Lomachenko in that fight. We need to talk about it next time. Not now, because we already wrapped it, but next time we got to discuss it, I got to ask you what happened in that fight. I know you
I watched it. Actually, I watched it twice. I watched the other night when they showed the replay because I wanted to make sure that my eyes weren't going bad. But, you know. But, look, closing off the show, we'll be back next week. Actually, next week's show, we'll talk about – we'll probably open up talking about Loma versus Lopez. And then we definitely got to talk about Ortega versus Zombie, which we didn't get to tonight. And then we'll definitely be talking about this UFC 254 card. So everybody have a good weekend. Take care of each other. Stay safe. Wear a mask. Practice social distancing. Live, love, laugh. Live your life to the fullest. Tell somebody you love them. And have one good laugh every day. And closing, like always, peace.